Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 8th of December. Yesterday at the Climate Change Conference in Cancun, Mexico, Christine Figueres, the Executive Secretary of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, said that the list of vulnerable nations in the arena of climate change is long and it is growing. There are a number of islands looking for ways to evacuate their entire population because of saltwater intrusion and rising sea levels. Sooner rather than later, island nations will have to seek refuge in other higher-lying countries. The floods that devastated Pakistan, Venezuela, and Colombia this year are a wake-up call. The wildfires that gripped Russia are a wake-up call. This year's hottest summers to date in Japan and China are a wake-up call. There will be worse impacts, and no country will be exempt. Also this week, a major paper is being released, and it is going to be coming out in a behavioral journal. It's done by Ohio State University. Scientists who have been studying ice and climate for many, many years now, who find that the situation is rather grim and that these people have had direct observations of climate as well as evidence derived from ice cores extracted from glaciers around the world. These people have spent more time on ice fields above 18,000 feet than any human being in history. And they find that glaciers serve as early indicators of climate change. And what they have found is rather grim. Virtually all of us are now convinced, they say, that global warming poses a clear and present danger to civilization. Joining us this hour to talk about climate change and about the conference that is taking place in Cancun, where delegates now from over 200 countries are meeting for this week's rounds of the United Nations climate talks. John Fialca is with us. John is editor of Climate Wire, and we're happy to have John with us and to welcome your phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Hello, John. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
For all of these dire warnings about the trouble that we're in, this planet is in, this conference has not received a whole lot of attention, and I wonder why.
Well, these conferences have been held since 1995. They're a consensus process. Everybody has to agree roughly on things. And in this one in particular, there are no expectations of meaningful results. And so there's a possibility that something might get done here. A lot of the hoopla is absent. A lot of the celebrities are gone. It's just a lot of ministers in a big room, and there is a possibility of things happening here. But at the same time, you see people's interest in the polls and the climate issue have been dropping both here and in Europe, and so we're in a state of I don't know. I guess I call it numbness about this issue, despite all the signs that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Something might get done. What might get done?
Well, you have the two big players in the world, the U.S. and China. They're the two biggest greenhouse gas emitters, and they're sort of circling each other in the ring right now, trying to figure out what they can agree upon. We have three more negotiating days left in Cancun, and I forget whether. I think it's called Kennedy's Law that says anytime you have a situation like that, they use up all the available time. And that's been true of Cancun. So one of the things they're looking at is the reporting system, how countries report their emissions internationally and how they measure them and whether they can be questioned on these measurements. And China has been being coy about this in the last day or two, saying it's premature to demand that they do an internationally binding commitment, and it's a sovereignty issue about their reporting, and they're a poor nation, among other things they've said. It sounds like negotiating speak to me, and it sounds like there may be some shift in that position toward the end of the week, but it's early yet.
Mm-hmm. And what about some of these? We don't even hear very much about this when the Executive Secretary of the UN Framework Convention gave a speech yesterday. She was talking about what we've already noticed, and I haven't heard a whole lot about these islands that are looking for ways to evacuate their entire population because of rising sea levels. Is there a great deal of that going on, John?
Well, they have been a fixture at all of these conferences. They're small island nations. There are a bunch of them, the Seychelles, Tuvalu, the Marshall Islands, and they're looking at an existential question here. I mean, we, the big countries, some people think these negotiations can go on forever for them. If the sea level rises, 3 feet, some of them are gone. And then the question is, are you still a nation when you're underwater? What happens to your people? Who takes them in? Are they refugees? Are they citizens? What law protects them? There are a lot of awful unanswered questions here, and these people are very shrill, as you might expect, at these conferences, but a lot of times they're sort of regarded as kind of background noise by the bigger nations, and it's sad to watch. This has been going on for 15 years, and it's just sad to watch.
15 years?
Yep.
Well, that's disheartening, isn't it?
Yeah, this whole debate is part of the reason, I think, for the collapse in the polls, people's lack of interest in this is this sort of numbness that sets in.
You know,
how many times can you cry wolf?
Well, Climate Wire had a column on December 1st that is just amazing to me. It is Cancun, the center of the global warming universe. But when you look at people in the United States, the response is, are you sending a representative? Are you going? Cancun for what? Said Senator Tom Coburn from Oklahoma. No, I don't usually go to anything. That's a good enough reason. Senator Dianne Feinstein, who supported climate legislation last year, said that the global negotiations didn't make a bleep on her radar. I haven't really thought about it, to be honest with you. Senator Barbara Boxer, who made fighting climate change a signature issue. She's too busy in the lame duck session to go. Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson, whose state emits the most greenhouse gases in the U.S. and more than most countries, said that, you know, committee jurisdiction was her excuse and she wasn't invited to attend. And the list goes on. Talk about disheartening. These people have just kind of written the issue off, it appears to me.
Well, we just had an election where the issue was ridiculed by a lot of conservatives. There's a lot of noise rising from the skeptics that this is not real. Never mind the science. It's just really, we'll get through this. And that seems to be the mindset. Even among, as you mentioned, some of liberals in Congress, some of them are just kind of burned out on this issue. When they talk about the radar, they're talking about polls and election results.
Mm-hmm.
And the American people, for some reason, are simply not aroused by this in the last 2 years.
Yeah. What is supposed to be the hoped-for outcome of this conference? All these people are gathered from all over the world. What's really high on the agenda that most people can agree needs to get done this week?
Well, there's some talk about rules for forests, protecting the world's forests. This is one way to store carbon is by preventing people from tearing, just slash and burn devastating forests around the country. And there are a lot of countries, developing countries, that would like to protect them. They'd also like to get paid for protecting them. And there's a possibility that there could be an agreement on that. This reporting system I was talking about, that would be a good thing, even though I'm told, anyway, the science isn't quite there to implement it if they do agree on it. Any kind of a detente on this issue between us and China, coming closer together, would be helpful for the world to see, because we're the two biggest emitters. We're not about to disappear under the waves, and a lot of people are looking to us in particular for leadership.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with James Fallows, who wrote about clean coal. I'm sure you saw his article in the Atlantic last week or the week before. And he was discussing how China is so far ahead of us in terms of dealing with the clean coal issue and also taking the lead on green technology. Would you confirm that?
Well, at the same time, they're also the lead on importing coal and building coal-fired power plants and cornering the world's oil. And this is a full-court press on their part. They have made some advances in clean technology. There's concern here in the United States that they may soon dominate the field. They already do in solar. But at the same time, the background is that they're have a heavy intake of coal. Their power plants are something like 80% dependent on coal to make electricity, and their economy continues to boom. You don't hear about the coal side of this. They are making some advances in what's known as green coal, that is getting the greenhouse gases, particularly CO2, out of the coal before you burn it, and injecting that in the ground to store it safely. But this is a decades-long process to implement that commercially. In the meantime, they are Mr. Big in coal in the world, and that's the side of it you don't hear.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about this report that I think is about to be published by the scientists at Ohio State University, these scientists who have been looking at glaciers and spending a good portion of their lives on ice fields above 18,000 feet. It's a very dramatic report from them, and they say that really humanity is in deep trouble. There's a very clear pattern in the scientific evidence documenting that the Earth is warming, that warming is due largely to human activity, that warming is causing important changes in climate. Rapid and potentially catastrophic changes in the near future are very possible, and we got a danger here to civilization.
Well, you know, the science has been saying that for probably 15 years.
Yes.
And we are seeing things now accelerating. We're seeing changes in these ice fields and glaciers that have never been seen before in human memory. If you have a breakup of the polar ice caps, or in the case of the Himalayas, a disappearance of these glaciers, you're going to have a huge drinking water problem, especially in Asia from the Himalayas with the melting of the polar ice caps, which is accelerating. Your sea levels rise. The argument is how many meters? You know, it doesn't really take much of a rise, maybe 6 to 10 feet, 20 feet. Well, you've got most of the major cities in the world on the coasts that are now submerged. This is going to happen in the next 50 years, they predict. And yet it's part of this numbness. You know, people have been hearing this and hearing this. They don't see it happening. They hear skeptics saying, well, let's not listen to this. Let's not spend any money on this. You know, we have other things. We got to worry about jobs. Public seems to be in a I'm not buying it mode right now for these symptoms, even though they're there.
It's really dumbfounding, isn't it? It's such an important issue. And when you hear scientists say that this is happening faster than they thought, you can't wait on an issue like this. You can't haggle over stuff. You got to, as a planet, deal with it, don't you?
Well, here we get to the skeptics. Some of them are quite eloquent and bright people, and they're saying, look, what we know about this, a lot of it comes from computer models. You can't really test these things in a lab. These are computer models. They're peering into the future with the data that we have now, and they're predicting outcomes that may or may not occur. We're just too dependent on these things. On the other hand, you have the scientists walking around in the glaciers seeing stuff real time that they have never seen before. And you have a frustration level on the part of the scientists. You know, they've been communicating and telling people this, and we're not getting more interested. We're getting less interested.
Right.
And so if you're a scientist, you must stay up nights wondering what this is, you know, why this divorce between our interest in science and our follow-through on science.
Did you see the Remarkable National Geographic Great Migration series? They had a piece on seals and how female and male seals who go north of Russia for the migration patterns, the ice is gone. And so the female seals used to go a different place. They're supposed to be separated. And instead, they have to go to where there is ice, which means they go to where the males are. And there are these incredible scenes of tens of thousands of seals. And they're fighting with each other now because they don't have enough space. I mean, it's just human documentation of something. And I don't think there's a whole lot of question about, well, we know the Earth is warming. There's some maybe difference of opinion, but very, very slight about what's causing it. You know, to have this kind of migration patterns already changing, already being documented.
Well, you know, the irony there is this is happening in a part of the world where that has the lowest population level. And so the average person doesn't hear about it, doesn't see it.
Yeah.
More than likely now, the average person doesn't read as much, probably didn't read the National Geographic, didn't see it on Comedy Central or wherever they get their news, and so it didn't happen.
We're going to welcome phone calls. We're talking about the climate change conference that is being little noticed in Cancun, although it is drawing diplomats from all over. There are some 200 people who are meeting in these couple days, they've already met since the end of November, and they're meeting until December 10, talking about issues and seeing if they can make any kind of, they can reach any kind of consensus to have meaningful results on several issues. Our guest is John Fialca. He's the editor of Climate Wire, which is an internet newsletter devoted to all of the issues, economic, political, business, science, and technology surrounding global warming. Until January of 2008, he was a reporter with the Wall Street Journal's Washington Bureau, where he covered a number of beats over the last 25 years, including defense and intelligence matters. He served abroad as the lead reporter for the Journal in the First Gulf War and in the London Bureau during the waning days of the Cold War. His special areas, nuclear power, nuclear proliferation, war mobilization, politics and money, and of course now, energy and environmental matters. He's the author of three books, including Hotel Warriors and other books, Economic Espionage in America. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program this Wednesday, David Eisenhower will be joining us. He's the grandson of President Eisenhower, and he's written a very interesting book. He was a teenager, just about to become a teenager, when Ike left office and returned to Gettysburg for his retirement. And it documents the years from 1961 to 1969. David spent a great deal of time studying his grandfather's life, but there are also just amusing and interesting stories about Ike trying to learn Spanish from David and their life on the farm. And then he includes a lot of Eisenhower's thoughts and relationships with Harry Truman and John Kennedy and Richard Nixon. And you'll find it a very interesting conversation, I'm sure, as the book is. All right, let's go to phone calls as we look at Cancun. Frank from Madison, I know, has been following this issue closely. Frank, hello. You're on the air.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Frank.
Thank you very much for the topic and your guest. And I would like to say that the Thompson paper that you're referring to is out.
It is out.
And if you go to Climate Progress, you can get the links to it directly, and it's downloadable.
Okay.
And but one of the most significant thing about it was very, very clear paper, readily understandable presentation of the evidence and so on. But they abandon reticence at the end. We're not in a situation where we can fail to do something and act later. The later we act, the greater the costs. And although it's still in science speak, the last sentence says We are making a choice between the amount of mitigation, the amount of adaption, and the amount of suffering that we're going to pay if we do nothing. So mitigation is reducing the CO2 emissions. Adaption is whether or not you're going to rebuild the city, those coastal dunes and the cities that are in low-lying places, whether or not you're going to invest in a bigger barrage on the Thames, that type of thing. And the suffering is going to be dislocated people and loss of lives and a rather grim future, not for our grandchildren, but for our children and for many of us. That paper is quite understandable. But I would like to point out that there's been a concerted disinformation campaign. Copenhagen failed to a degree because of dishonesty on the part of the advanced countries. They wanted a more congenial deal, and they didn't cut the developing nations in on it, and that blew up in their faces. But the other thing was when Copenhagen, this is around Christmas, occurred, there was the email ClimateGate scandal, which was
right.
covered by the media uncritically, and the actual science and the issues being considered at Copenhagen were not addressed. And since then, the climate, the media climate has either been indifference or reporting on scandal. And that in itself is a scandal on the part of the media. Wisconsin Public Radio did have one of the chief disinformers on in that period. The guest would be able to suggest where we're going and what needs to be done at Cancun, rather than the prospects of what may not be done. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Frank. Thanks, as always.
Is this a question to me?
It is, John.
All right.
Take it.
one of the hazards of this issue is that the media always gets thumped for not achieving the result that a lot of people achieve. And basically, we're like Congress. If it's on our radar, it's got to be up in the polls, and people have to be anxious about it. And right now, that isn't happening. And so, you know, you may wonder why Cancun isn't on the front pages. That's the reason. We are a country that prizes free speech. The skeptics have used it. I don't think the ClimateGate and the media's non-coverage of it or whatever it was is the issue here. The issue is, I think, the numbness of people who've been hearing this and hearing this and seeing nothing happen and hearing all these dire things, and they're tired of it. And it's sad to watch, but the skeptics have had their say. What is the real problem here is that you're asking people to sacrifice. You're asking people to do things that will cost them. Their electricity rates will go up. They may have to move out of where they live. I mean, it's painful. And it's, you think about it, we've had great difficulties in democracy coping with getting people mobilized for wars. I mean, the struggle to get us into World War I took us 3 or 4 years. In World War II, another 2 years, a lot of hemming and toing and froing, and with war, you have a kind of bloody shirt. You can say, oh, they're about to land here. They bombed us, Pearl Harbor, all that. But here, you've got something that might happen to your grandchildren, perhaps. And people are tuning out. And I don't think the media has the power to stop that. It's there is something going on here with public behavior that the scientists who deal with that say they can't understand. Mm-hmm. So it's not as simple as it may sound.
Tell me about what we have been able to accomplish, John, since we started looking as a planet at this issue seriously.
Well, one thing that they're talking about in Cancun, and they have been talking about it, is the debt that the developed nations, the ones who have put the greenhouse gases up in the air since the Industrial Revolution, owe to the developing countries who haven't industrialized, aren't burning way as much coal as we do, and who are going to feel the brunt of this as sea levels rise, as drought and drinking water disappear. Drought appears, drinking water goes away, crops fail. And there is this sort of agreement that was arrived at in Cancun that the developed countries would mobilize about $100 billion and send it to the developing countries. Well, now you're hearing, especially from conservative politicians in the United States, we're not going to send that money abroad. We're going to keep it right here. It's jobs. It's for us.
Mm-hmm.
So the feeling of oughtness, I guess, would be the word here, that we heard maybe 10 years ago, even when former President George W. Bush was campaigning, we ought to do something about this, is fading.
Let's go to Tom in Milwaukee. Hi, Tom.
Hey, good morning, Kathleen. This conversation is very interesting, and I'd like to kind of weigh in for all of the numb people out here. I guess I would consider myself one of them. We've been hearing this whole issue go back and forth and back and forth about global warming, and I have my theories about why it seems to be so split along partisan lines, party lines, at least here in the United States. And I think it has a lot to do with the alignment of one party versus another with big business, special interests. I think that what it's going to require is a lot of large corporations to really dig deep into their pockets to get this under control. For example, I work in the trucking industry, and I know that there are some things that are coming down the line a ways, requirements, new equipment that trucks are going to have to cut down on emissions. And I know that some of these larger companies are fighting this with all they have, because it's going to mean one thing. It's going to mean costing them money. And I think that's really at the heart of the issue. It's an economical decision that big corporations are making, and I think they're trying to squash and squelch any report that has anything to do with whether global warming, in fact, exists. And I would be interested in your guest's take on that.
Okay.
And I'll take my comment off the air.
Thanks, Tom. John?
Well, we have an interesting article on the Climate Wire today that's right on the point of this issue. One of the almost no-brainer things that has occurred that you can do is to screw in a compact fluorescent light bulb in your light socket, and it will save you money over the year. It will reduce your greenhouse gas imprint or footprint, and it's these things are now like a buck and a half or something. This has now been raised as an issue by conservatives who say the government shouldn't tell you what kind of light bulb to buy. And this is an invasion of your rights as a citizen to do whatever you want. And this is a free country, and what are we talking about? In the trucking industry, there are a lot of advanced diesels that use less fuel. There's also a move to put more freight on the rails, which trucking companies don't like at all. But in the long run, if we have a long run in this partisan atmosphere, there are lots of ways we can be energy efficient and over the long run not have to pay a whole lot, in fact save some money, and at the same time reduce our emissions. But we do have your speaker is correct. We do have an unusually partisan atmosphere where everything is disputed, including compact fluorescence. So it's very hard to get anything done. And a lot of this may seem irrational to the average person, but that's what's going on.
And thank you very much for the call. Let's go next to Matt from Middleton. Hi, Matt.
There's 2 points here. The first one is that I think that a lot of people are hearing about, you hear the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which sort of fell apart when they couldn't get a carbon trading scheme set up. I think a lot of people see that as powerful business interests, as trading the right to pollute in other countries, And the ultimate cost for that gets passed on to the little guy through increased taxes or through a restriction on what he can or can't do in his daily life. You brought up compact fluorescents. They might be a good idea in some scenarios, but in many of them where you walk into a room like a closet and you turn the light on for 5 seconds and turn it back off, the compact fluorescent will actually burn out much quicker. And we also completely ignore what we do with the light bulbs or what people will do with them, which is throw them in the trash when they're done with them. And Wisconsin, DNR did a report, and they find that over 300 pounds of mercury every year are added to Wisconsin landfills, and eventually that is going to wind up in the environment. So I think that the solutions that are currently being proposed to climate change, if we can believe what's currently out there, because we do have some scientists saying we shouldn't release this or shouldn't read data from these temperature monitors because it sways the outcome that we want. Until we get scientists that we can trust, that we can walk up to and say, I'm not influenced by a donation from a private industry either for or against climate change, these are the actual facts. Nobody's going to trust them anymore. There's too much of a business interest that's springing up around so-called climate change. I mean, a CFL at $1.26, when you can buy a 4 of Edison's bulbs for 98 cents, shouldn't it be up to the consumer to decide when the 98-cent bulb that's going to be in a closet for the next 10 okay. years and used maybe 6 times makes more sense?
John.
Well, let's see. I don't know where to begin with that one. If you put the 98-cent bulb, I think you can buy them for a quarter. They've been around since Edison. They require something like 10 times the electricity that the compact fluorescent does. And where do you suppose that electricity comes from? 50% of the time in the United States, it comes from a coal-fired power plant. And they put up way more mercury up in the air where you breathe it than this little tiny amount of mercury that he's suggesting is in a compact fluorescent. It's there. It's minuscule compared to the amount of mercury put in the air by burning coal. And coal is one of the things that if we had, you know, some consensus in the country, we could probably solve that coal problem. It's going to cost us. It's going to cost everybody. A little guy, indeed, is going to have to pay some for it. But in the end, we'll all be healthier and better and do our part in this great drama of what do we do about this situation.
Tell me who you think is really leading the charge in terms of what we absolutely have to do to the planet to keep misery from entering the lives or further misery from going on with people who are already being severely affected by climate change and to prevent the worst of what easily could happen to this planet. Who's leading the charge, the moral charge, the scientific charge, the charge to get countries on board?
Well, you have the United Nations. You have the woman that you just mentioned in Europe, the European Union. You have scientists like James Hansen. You have politicians like Al Gore, and they have suffered mightily for their leadership positions. Gore is ridiculed almost daily on Capitol Hill, sometimes laughed at for taking the position he has on this issue. It is a message that currently a lot of people simply don't want to hear. Part of the reason for this, I think, is it may have been oversold in the beginning, especially by environmental groups who presented it as sort of a nice thing to do. Really didn't discuss all the costs that we all have to bear, including the little guy. And it turned out, yes, it's a nice thing to do, but it's going to be expensive. It's going to be like fighting a war, and we don't like that. And so we don't want to hear it, and we turn it off.
Here's an email that's come in from Bonnie in Madison. Would you comment, please, on these points? Bill McKibben is currently in Cancun and was interviewed on Democracy Now! Saying the imprint of U.S. collusion with fossil fuel industries is all over the conference, and also mentioned the U.S. bullying of other countries on climate issues as revealed by WikiLeaks.
Well, part of the reasons part of the reason for this numbness that I've been talking about is the demonization that goes on for the enviros, anybody in big business. A lot of them is suspicious. They can't really compromise. They're sort of holy in their cause, and so compromise doesn't happen. There are exceptions. There's the Environmental Defense Fund, which is one of the people trying to reach agreement in the middle of the arena here. There are a lot of responsible companies, including utilities and coal companies, that are eager for some certainty here and are willing to compromise, willing to make some sacrifice if everybody else does. And a lot of them say, look, you know, tell us the rules, Congress. If you give us the rules and give us enough time to carry them out, we'll do it. But there is this partisanship that your caller mentioned that has really gotten to levels. I've been in this town for 40 years, and I haven't seen it, where you can't agree on anything, including the compact fluorescent light bulb. And so we are in a state of polarity here, sort of the political version of the glaciers. Something has happened, and it's not nice, but we're, you know, it's here.
And it's here during a time when we need to deal with quite a few fairly important issues, so that it makes it almost impossible to deal with the issues, so they get worse.
Well, some of the scientists, including Jim Hansen, have raised the issue of their grandchildren. You know, these things they're talking about, some of them, the more violent storms, the droughts, the drying of the American West, the sea level rise will probably take away some of our cities, beginning with New Orleans. We're not going to see these, maybe, but our grandchildren will. Do you owe your grandchildren something? They waive that issue. And this is, again, one of those things where, yeah, the enemy's not coming over the beaches tomorrow, but your grandchildren will suffer if you don't do something now, and it'll cost way more money if we postpone it. And that sort of contributes to the numbness. Well, we don't want to hear it.
Lori from Viroqua. Hi, Lori.
Hi. There may be 200 delegates at this meeting, but I know for sure there are thousands, if not tens of thousands, of indigenous and other landed people, peasants and farmers, at this conference who've been meeting for months and trying to get the attention of the North. And one of the concerns that they have is something that you seem to have endorsed, is the agreements on forest preservation, which in their mind, and which in a lot of our minds, means that people who live on the land are going to be kicked off. The land is going to be turned over to timber companies or big agricultural concerns, and then they're going to get all these like carbon offset things. So they'll tear down a diverse forest ecosystem and plant eucalyptus or whatever, palm kernel oil. So I wonder if you are listening to the indigenous people and landed people or any of the people who were there who met in Cochabamba, you know, 3 months ago, 100,000 people were there, and we never hear about that. We just get sidetracked by light bulbs. So I have to go back to work now. Thank you.
Thanks, Lori.
They're part of the chorus at these things, indigenous peoples and the small island people. People are about to go underwater, and they become kind of like background music. They're going to suffer. They're going to suffer first. But to get back to where we're talking about our grandchildren, we're all going to suffer. It's so we live on high ground, so we have to get back to work. We have a job. A lot of these people don't. If you look at this very far down the road, a lot of those people will be migrating to other countries that don't want to have them. That's already going on now. And countries are like India are building walls so that the people from the adjoining countries can't come in. Who's going to fix this? We have a hard time sometimes handling the politics in Wisconsin. We're going to deal with the world. We're trying. It's a consensus mechanism we're dealing with. Everybody in the room has to agree. And if everybody is yelling at each other, it's just not going to happen.
We're talking about the Global Warming Conference in Cancun, Mexico. It's continuing until December 10. And this is the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change talks. We're talking about what their goals may be, who's attending, and why there seems to be a certain degree of apathy about all of this. Our guest is John Fialka. He's the editor of Climate Wire, which is an internet newsletter devoted to all of the issues surrounding global warming, economic, political, business, science, technology. It's a new product of E&E Publishing, a Washington, D.C.-based company that provides comprehensive daily coverage of energy and environmental news. He was with the Wall Street Journal's Washington Bureau for a number of years, 25 years, actually. And he's with us this hour. We have a phone line to give you, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go back to phone calls. Mike in Three Lakes. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. As one of the skeptics, I wouldn't doubt for a minute that global warming is taking place, because your own ice cores show that this has happened over hundreds of millions of years, long before humankind ever even existed. And my problem is, if you want to convince the unbelievers, you better tell us what percentage of this problem is man-made and what percentage of it can be cured by mankind's activities, because it is the essence of all species eventually to become extinct. It's a natural phenomenon. Any biologist will tell you that. And mankind may very well be aimed for extinction.
John.
Well, you have a consensus among world scientists who deal with this, the IPCC, that it's man-caused, that this particular perturbation in the world, unlike the others, is caused by the footprint of man, particularly the burning of fossil fuels since the Industrial Revolution. There is a wide consensus among scientists that this is true. I don't think it's part of a conspiracy. I don't think it's good news. I think there are a lot of people trying to find a way around this, to not believe it, to not hear it, but it's there. And we're seeing changes that we've never seen before. Some of them we can deal with. Some of them we can adapt to if we want to, if we can get a resolve up to doing something. But as you've heard, a lot of people are too busy. They don't want to hear about it. One of the really interesting things, and we've heard this from some of your questioners, cap and trade, emissions trading,
uh-huh.
and what a scheme that is by big companies. Well, this happens to be a proposal by It was put together with environmental groups, Natural Resources Defense Council, and Environmental Defense, to appeal to Republicans. If you emit from a coal-fired power plant, there should be a cost to that, because it's a health problem, it's a warming problem. And if we can deal with that, then a lot of companies, it'll spur innovation. We'll have solar power, wind power, other alternatives suddenly seeing a market, and now that's been demonized as cap and tax. We can't have that. Can't have any taxes. Can't pay any money to fix this. And so we're kind of at a tipping point ourselves here, as far as what do we do? Do we do anything? Do we just simply not believe it?
Thanks for the call. Joey in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I'd like to point out this is like history repeating itself. After the Civil War, civil rights was a really important issue. There were freedmen's bureaus being thrown up, and African Americans were being helped to the polls, to help, go vote and, get their voice out. But then the recession hit in the 1870s, and that got put in a back burner, and that allowed Jim Crow laws to be, and segregations to be put into effect, and it didn't get changed for 100 years until, things like TV made the issue obvious. And I'm afraid that this is just happening again, and it's going to be put on the back burner for 50-100 years until it gets really obvious. And I think we really need to find something to get this issue out and in a very high priority again.
Well, it's an interesting point. There are people who argue that this is like slavery or child labor, that once we get up ahead of steam, we can just simply outlaw it, stop it, do something about it. And there are 15 years ago, there was kind of an interest in doing something about it. And then you had some things happen. I think the biggest thing that happened was the recession, a big one, and the idea of something that would cost them that they didn't really have to deal with right away sort of sunk in. And that's part of the reason for the numbness. The issue became jobs now and not, you know, what we can do for our grandchildren.
Thank you, Joey, for the call. Larry in Middleton, hi.
Hi. One comment on the prior caller talking about whether human activity is causing Earth's temperature to rise. The guest might have talked about scientific evidence showing that when they plot CO2 in the atmosphere against the Earth's temperature, there's almost a one-to-one correlation. The reason I called was to ask the guest to talk about the potential urgency of the problem. Science tells us that carbon dioxide is increasing from about 380 parts per million, a few parts per million per year. I think this gives the average listener the impression that climate change will be very slow, very predictable, and we have plenty of time to deal with it. I'd like the guest to talk about the sudden, unexpected shifts that can occur. I think we know from research with the ice cores, et cetera, that in the past we've had changes of maybe 15 degrees in 10 years on the Earth's temperature, and we can have feedback loops and mutually reinforcing changes that can suddenly accelerate the changes, and I'd like the guests to talk about that. And lastly, quickly, hearing the discussion earlier about the reasons why people don't want to get the message about climate change, I'm reminded of statements to the effect that it's very difficult to get somebody to understand something if his livelihood depends on his not understanding it.
Interesting point. John, can you comment?
Well, what your caller is talking about is called tipping points by scientists, and the ice cores show that they've occurred in the past. One example is sudden melting of the polar ice caps, and another point is the sudden reappearance of glaciers. Another one would be shifting of ocean currents like the Gulf Stream. All of these things are now being talked about by the scientists as a possibility that could happen if we get up above 450 parts per million. Now, when you think about it, 450 parts per million is a tiny amount, but what they're saying is from all the things we can see, and we can see a lot more now because we have satellites and things we didn't have 50 years ago, 100 years ago, that's a lot, and it could push us into one of these tipping points. And now we're talking about real tragedy, disaster, and that's where the numbness comes in again. They don't want to hear it. They'd rather not think about it. They can't stop it anyway. Man didn't cause it. Mm. And so let's get on to baseball or something.
Right. Well, we got to get onto baseball anyhow, but we got to deal with a lot of things at the same time. We're perfectly capable of doing that. John, thank you so much for being with us. It was a really interesting discussion.
Yeah, well, thank you for inviting me.
Thank you, John. John Fialka is the editor of Climate Wire. And if you want more information about what's going on in Cancun, that's a good source because it is not being widely discussed in the press, which it should be. We didn't want to leave this hour without paying a brief tribute to Elizabeth Edwards. She was one of those rare people who you could speak to and you felt like you had been with her. You grew up together. You went to college together. She was an incredibly gracious person, and we had the privilege of interviewing her a couple times on this program, and I thought it would be good for us to hear her voice again today as we bid farewell to her great courage and her very, very difficult life. She should have been the one running for president, right? This is a clip of an interview I did with Elizabeth in 2007, responding to a question about her decision to remain in the presidential campaign with her husband despite the reoccurrence from her cancer.
I honestly think that I'm representative of a lot of women and men who made the same kinds of choices when faced with the same kind of diagnoses. It has been truly gratifying to me that people who've actually faced it have come to the same conclusion I have, which, you know, the sort of live until you die attitude. And I don't, you know, people are judgmental. And I just hope that they don't ever have to come across the day when they have to make their own that same decision about their own lives.
Yeah.
And when they do, I think honestly that they'll probably end up, you know, these are active, vibrant people who are disagreeing with me, who have real and full lives. And my expectation is that they'll want to hold on to them just like I want to hold on to mine.
We'll miss that voice. We did a lengthier interview in November of 2006, and we hope to have that posted on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, later today if you'd like to listen to her again. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for giving us that clip. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing this Climate Change Hour. And thank you, everybody, for all of your calls. We'll continue in a moment.